name is Melanie. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm really glad to be here. Thank you, Stan. Where are you? For sharing. That was really awesome. And thank you, Mark, for asking me to speak. And he did a really good job this last 6 months. It was really exciting to come here and see who would be speaking. And it was really... It's really great, probably until now. But most of you have heard me, so, you know, hopefully, if there's some new people in here, I won't bore you guys to death. I was thinking, I'm already emotional, and I just got up here. I mean, I wasn't nervous, but now I'm emotional. I was thinking about how amazing... how amazing this program is and how amazing it's been to watch people get sober. I have a friend that I got, he got sober. I was already sober, but he got sober in Milwaukee, and he's been riding his bike across the country. He started in Seattle, and he's going to hit Savannah on Saturday, and it was from Pacific to Atlantic, and he's raising money for a friend of his who was paralyzed from the waist down. It was some paralysis fundraising group or something. But anyway, so every morning there's a blog or sort of like on Facebook, and it says like morning observation at breakfast. And I can't wait to get up and read Facebook in the morning to see where he is. It's so amazing. And he was in Plains, Georgia the other day, and most of you know I worked for that president, and I said I wish I would have known, you know, I would have, he was, because he'll come out at the gate, like, if you let him know you're there, he'll come out from his house to the gate and say hello if he's in town, and but I guess he wasn't seeing people there, and so it was the first time I started talking to him, and I said, I wish I would have known. I would have called and had him, you know, like my family knows him, and he probably would have come out. And but anyway, we start this dialogue, and at the end of the dialogue, he says, please say hello to Barb for me. And then he tells me this whole amazing story about how she brought him back to the program, how he came into the coffee shop that she was working at a really low point in his life, and was trying to come back to AA, and she said, hey, you know, and gave him a hug and said, here's where the meeting is tonight, and sent him on his way, and he never forgot it, you know, and it was just so touching. And, of course, I'm reading it to her because she can't get it on her phone, and I'm sobbing hysterically. She's like, oh, that's nice. Oh, that's really nice. But anyway, my sobriety date is... October 9th, 1987, and I got sober in South Florida, and I lived not far from Hallandale. I lived in Hollywood, and my home group there used to be the Joy of Living on Tuesday nights, and the way I ended up in AA was obviously I drank too much, which I gotta say, lately I have two new girls who are here tonight, and I always... try to sponsor people that I have the same experience, you know, like I'm not really, I've learned that I need to have the same experience because I never shot heroin, and so I really don't know how to help somebody that shot heroin. Hopefully they drank, but, you know, I don't understand that part. So they're both alcoholics, and I was like, oh, my God, you don't know how refreshing that is. You don't get too many real alcoholics anymore. Not that it's bad that if, you know... You're welcome. If you did drugs, you're welcome. I don't know what I'm saying. But anyway, I'm going to stop right now. I'm not getting into that singleness of purpose thing. But anyway, I'm just... so it's been really fun to sort of have somebody that drank like I did. And I grew up here. I was adopted, and I thought that was my problem for a while, I think. I kept waiting to get rescued by my real parents because you know, it was really horrible at home. My parents love me. And I'm stealing that from Charlie. They love me, you know, way too much. And but anyway, I'll, you know, like everybody says, there's something definitely wrong. I always wanted to be something other than I was, you know, and the best example I have of that was in the sixth grade. I told people that I was a jockey and that I would come to school in rubber riding boots. Total lie, you know that, right? And I wasn't a jockey, and but I would come to school in rubber boots and say, I'm leaving today to go race my horse in Georgia. And I would go to see my grandmother, who was dying of cancer, but, you know, I was racing my horse. And then I'd come back on Monday. And, like, everybody knew I was lying, but I kept doing it. I had to keep it up, you know. Like, they got more elaborate and more elaborate. Well, how big is your horse? Yeah. You know, and I had to do a lot of research on horses because I really didn't know anything about horses. I knew about outfits, but, you know, like what to wear, but I didn't know about horses. So anyway, but there was always some lie I was telling because I wasn't good enough. And they were not lies, you know, they were lies to make myself look better, you know. And that went on even into sobriety for a long time. I'm always amazed when people come in here and they get well right away. You know, I didn't get well for a long time. Not to say that you can't get well right away. I just didn't. I was a slow learner. And I had a lot of secrets, and I'll get to that later because I've had a sort of a revelation about that. But anyway, so I grew up here, and I'm adopted, and I'm in this family that doesn't drink, and there's no liquor in the house except one bottle behind the trash can that, you know, my father would get, like, from a, I don't know, I would say a vendor, but he was an engineer. I don't know where he got the bottle, but it was behind the trash can. And every now and then I'd taste it, and it tasted horrible. I mean, we were talking about that the other night. The taste of alcohol, it was not exactly pleasant, but yet, you know, we all drank for the effect. And but you had to drink enough to get the effect, so it took a while for me to figure that part out, that you got to have more than a swig to get a buzz. But anyway, you know, graduated from high school and, really started drinking in high school. They had these things called keg parties and, they were out by, in Lake Country, wherever that is now, Lutz maybe. People had lake houses then. It was really interesting. They didn't have beach houses. They had beach houses, but they had a lot of lake houses. And, so we'd go to these lake houses and we'd drink and, the week before I went to my first party, I had pushed my parents' car out of the driveway and gone to a party that was on the causeway. The causeway used to be the big place when I was in high school and to drink. And there was a hotel there called the Causeway Inn, and a bunch of people had gotten a room, and I got there around 1 a.m., and everybody was hammered, and girls were throwing up in the bathroom and mascara coming down their faces, and I thought, I will never do that. And next week I was doing that. But it was the most amazing feeling. I went to this party and I thought, I'm not going to drink. I don't want to look like that. And I started getting pressure from my friends, like, you look like an idiot. Why aren't you drinking? So I started drinking, and they put a beer in my hand. I started drinking, and by the second beer, the thing happened that, this is why I'm in this room and why probably most of you are too. And I loved it. I chased it for probably 8 years. No, not 8 years. Well, I got here when I was 24, so however long that was. I can't do the math tonight. Maybe 6 years. I loved it. I loved it. I loved it. And somehow I was able to hide it well from my parents. They just thought I had, you know, emotional problems. I can't talk tonight. Emotional problems. And I had the opportunity to go to college, and they were going to pay for it. And so I went to big colleges to you know, you go on that senior tour with your parents, you know, to figure out where you want to go to school. And all those people really scared me, you know, that fear of people that we have. Like, University of Florida was way too big. There was no way. And Auburn was way too big. And Georgia was way too big. And so I ended up going to a small women's college in Macon, Georgia, called Wesleyan, which was my grandmother's alma mater. And honest to God, I don't even know how I got in. I don't know how I would have gotten in any school, because I was barely in school. I mean, I was the skipper, you know, like you would. I went to plant, you'd go out and smoke a pot at lunch, and then go to Palmacia and eat captain's wafers, because if you get caught by your parents signing a check with, you know, a school day week on it, obviously you're there at lunch, then they know you're skipping school. So we'd go stoned out of our minds, sit in the 19th hole at Palmacia and eat captain's wafers. And then cheat. We all cheated. When I went to high school, everybody cheated. I don't know about when you guys went, but we all cheated when I went. There were notes. You'd pass them down, you know, and people had shit on their hands or on their legs. Or, I mean, that is how I graduated, honest to God. I think I made 850. What's the high? Is 850 high on your SAT? It isn't, is it? I don't think so. Anyway, I didn't do very well. I mean, and it's funny because I have a first cousin who we just got the family newsletter, and he's the CEO of the Discover Card, and everyone in his family might as well be curing cancer. You know, he's probably going to win the Nobel Peace Prize, and we always joke about, he's not, but we always joke about writing our side of the family's newsletter, because it was nothing like that. I think he probably tripled that score, you know, without even cracking a SAT book. But anyway, so I somehow got into school, and I had been, prior to all this, I'd been having these born-again experiences where I knew something was wrong, but I knew there was something wrong with me, and I'd go to these, my parents had sent me to these schools that were religious, and they'd have altar calls on Friday, and I'd go running down the aisle, and I'd give my life to Jesus, and thought everything would change, and it didn't, you know, and I'd pretend to act like the other good Christian people in the church and the school and all this stuff, but really, I just wanted to be bad, and I know I've shared this before, there'd be like one guy outside smoking the cigarette, and they'd all get out of church, and they'd all come out and stare at this guy, and I'd be like, I want to be that guy, you know, I am that guy, and it's funny, because when I got sober, they talked about God. I knew what God was. And the fact that, you know, and I say this all the time, when they were smoking and swearing and talking about God, well, it, deep inside, I knew that was wrong, you know, like in my mind. I'm thinking, that's wrong. You can't do that and have a relationship with God. So I stopped praying, because I knew, for whatever reason, I had so much guilt from the way I grew up with the church, that if I smoked and swore and had relations outside of marriage, that, you know, that I wasn't going to stay sober, or that I couldn't have a relationship with God. And therefore, like, I had so many secrets. I didn't tell my sponsor. I didn't tell my friends. I was always talking at the mouth about what I was doing in AA, but I didn't do shit, you know? I mean, I was just keeping my own counsel, which is really dangerous. And so I think the biggest thing I've learned over the years is, like, don't keep any secrets, you know, because that will really, really mess you up. So I know I'm all over the place tonight. I'm drinking water, which is really new for me. I'm really late to the water game. I'm serious. Barb will go, and my husband will go, how about some water? No, I don't think so. How about a latte? But anyway, notice where the water came from. So I get to college, I'm born again, you know, a few times. I don't know, there's a cute guy, I go to a Bible study, I'm like, okay, I'll be born again. And I go off to college right after I have done that, and so I'm a good girl for about 2 days. And when I just, the guy that I followed to the Bible study moved to Israel to live on a kibbutz to work for Jews for Jesus. And found out he was in love with someone else on the kibbutz that he was living on. So I was like, oh yeah, forget it. I'm drinking. And I'm drinking now. And so I'm at Wesleyan, and at Wesleyan everybody dresses, and you know, all the girls dress a certain way. They have these things called Atta beads, and you just keep adding beads, and then you have a whole gold necklace of Atta beads, and everybody's proper, and there I am. And pretending, you know. And so they had this college in the same town, but it was like men and women, and they had this thing called, it was Mercer, and they had this thing called Wonderful Wednesday. And Wonderful Wednesday meant no school. And so that meant everybody went out Tuesday night, and there were 3-for-1 specials, which I think should be outlawed, but anyway, so if you went out Tuesday night and had 3-for-1s, you're not doing anything on Wednesday. But I'm in school. I'm not at Mercer. I'm at Wesleyan. So that's a problem. So I'm not going to class. And then somehow I finagle, and when I say finagle, I mean finagle, a White House internship, which when I went to my professor to tell her that I was being offered this internship, she said, please don't tell them you go to this school. They were mortified. And so I go, I decide that, you know, school is not for me. I need a big city. I need to be where the action is. I get this internship. And then I get the internship, which is an honor. And most of the people that have White House internships are, you know, from Brown and Yale. And they're writing, you know, position papers on Afghanistan or whatever. You know, they're really doing work. And that was not me. And I get there, and they say, we're going to put you in this, it was called the Information Center, and we just want you to make copies. I forgot about that till the other day. Here, why don't you just sit here? Don't do anything. Just make copies. And I thought, well, you know, I'm a go-getter, and this isn't gonna work for me. Plus, I would like to make some money. And can't you get me, like, a job? I'd like a job. I mean, who does that? I mean, I'm just such an asshole. And so anyway, but they did because, you know, they knew, you know, when you work in the White House, there's like, I don't know, it depends on the administration, but there's anywhere from 500 to 800 people in the actual White House, because it's not that just that little tiny building, it's the big building next door, the old executive office building. And so very few people actually that work there are close to a president. And these people knew I was close to a president. So they're like, yeah, give her what she wants, you know. So I ended up working for a man and was a scheduler for him, and was right, and drinking, oh my God, in Washington, D.C. in the 70s, oh my God, in 1979. I always forget. I got sober with young, my first year was with old timers, but my second year I was with young peoples, and we did Icky Pond, Miami, and you know, this is years and years ago. So I still, like, you know, I look at you and I go, we. I'm 52. You guys are like 25, you know, and I think I'm the same. I'm not. This will happen to you, by the way, as you stay in AA and get older, when you're still in young peoples going, yeah, we, and they're like, you, we, what are you talking about? You know, it happens, trust me. But anyway, so ATMs first came out when I was living there. It was this genius thing that you could go and put this card in, and it would just give you money. Back then, they didn't have it all the, you know, like all the kinks worked out. So I put my little card in, and it'd give me $50, and I'd be like, this is great, whether I had it or not. And so I'm taking out $50 every day. I'm going to lunch. I'm going to happy hour. And then I'm going to dinner. And I'm drinking my ass off. And, you know, a lot of things happen when you do that. And the bank calls and wants their money eventually, you know. And I would answer the phone, and for whatever reason, and this makes absolutely no sense, they would ask for me, and I'd say, hold, please. And then I'd come back on and disguise my voice in another voice and say, now I'm the same person that answered the phone, but I'm changing my voice when I come back on. And I say, she's at Camp David. Or I say, she's on Air Force One on her way to, you know, wherever, you know. I'm like, it just made up all these stories. And that was an amends I completely forgot about till the first time I spoke here. And still working with my sponsor on that, because it's changed hands so many times since I lived there. But anyway, then, you know, as you know, the Iranian hostage crisis happened and, you know, blew my stay in Washington. So, you know, he lost, and I, you know, wasn't going to stay around there, because who wants a girl with, you know, a drinking problem and really no skills except going out. to work for them. So I came home, but apparently there was somebody, and he hired me in Tallahassee. And I ended up moving to South Florida, and he was indicted by a federal grand jury the day I got to South Florida. He was probably one of us. And so I'm down there now, and I ended up going to work for another person that was running for office, and he was a current member of the House in Florida. And in that office, there was a woman in AA. And thank God for her. I mean, I've actually tried to find her. I have no idea where she is. Her name was Bonnie. And I knew she was in AA. I even went to a meeting with her once. It was her five-year anniversary, and she was taking a cake, and just went right over my head, you know. I'd say to her, do you think I'm an alcoholic? And she'd say, oh, I don't know, only you know, but you sure act like one. And and she would actually buy me liquor. We'd go out, and she kept buying me drinks, just hoping I'd hit that bottom, you know. And but I mean, just horrible stuff happened, you know, like to all of us, you know, especially women at the end, you know. Was looking for love all the time, you know, and drinking, and that's not a good combination. And you know, I was his scheduler, the congressman's scheduler, and, you know, I was sending him to places that he didn't need to be. And the last straw was I sent him to Tallahassee for a meeting that wasn't there. And he calls us all back on a, you know, it was a Saturday, he calls us all back in the office, and I'm baked. I have drank and smoked, and I'm like, can't even talk. I'm that inebriated. He calls everybody into the office, and I just sit there. Can't open my mouth, which was probably a really good thing. And he defended me. He said, you all put too much on her, you know, and they're all like leering at me. You know, they're just leering. And wasn't, I don't think, too long after that that apparently I decided to go to Key West. I had a girlfriend that had been a roommate that lived down there. And she... I don't know if she called or what, but I decided to find her. I had no idea where she lived, but I got in the car and I drove. And I don't remember any of that, because the next day I woke up in a not-so-nice situation, and I'm in Key West. I've never been to Key West. And my purse was gone, and my tank was on empty, and apparently I'd been to Sloppy Joe's because there were coasters all over the back seat. And... I found it. I found Sloppy Joe's, and I walked in, and I was appalled that people were in there at 7 a.m. drinking. Now, you know, God knows what I look like, but I'm appalled that people are drinking. And I marched up to the bartender, and I said, I have a very important job, you know. You need to give me some money. My purse was stolen here. And I'm sure it wasn't stolen. I'm sure I just, like, flew it in the air somewhere, you know. And anyway, so he gave me $10, which back then was, you know, like 30. And I filled up my tank with $10. That tells you how old I am, too. And there's no cell phones back then, so, you know, I didn't have any extra money to call anybody. So I'm driving back to Hollywood, and I don't remember any of it. I don't remember the bridges. I don't remember any of it. I just remember driving back going, this is bad. This is really bad. And that was the first time, because I'd always prided myself. People would call me and be like, what have you done lately? And I'd be like, I'd have some crazy story. Well, the Hell's Angels, you know, blah, 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 you know, just some crazy craziness. And I was proud of it. But by then, I was tired. Oh, my God, I was so tired. And so I ended up calling that woman when I got home, calling Bonnie and saying, you know, I want to go, I think, to one of those meetings. And the truth of the matter is, I really didn't think I was an alcoholic. I just thought I had incredibly bad luck. Incredibly bad luck. You know, poor me, you know. But the truth was, if you looked at my drinking, anything that happened to me when I was drinking. Or hungover. Or, you know, obsessed to get the drink. Whatever. It's all, everything revolved around drinking. And so, she said, I said, I'm obviously not coming to work. Can you pick me up? No. She said, I'll pick you up. So she came to pick me up, and those people that were really annoyed with me were in the back seat because they're in AA too, but I didn't know it. And it wasn't their first meeting, which is what my first thought was. They're coming to AA too, and they're like already in AA. So it was not really, I was uncomfortable right away. But we got to the meeting, and I walked in, and I couldn't explain to you why, and it still to this day it happens to me. You know, anytime I walk into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's and somebody said this the other night at the home meeting or the house meeting, it's like I walk in here and I go, you know, I just felt that from day one, and I've loved it ever since. I'm one of those people that I never hated AA. Most of you probably come in here hating it, which is great, you know, but that was not my experience. I probably would have hated it more had I done the work right away. I didn't. I was so lonely and isolated by the time I got here that it was like, really? You have to talk to me? I like you. You know, like everybody, you know, I had these friends all of a sudden. Who cares if they were 80 years old, you know? I mean, I had people that would talk to me, and they would come up to me and they'd pat me on the head and they'd be like, wow, you don't look so bloated anymore. And I'm like, really? Thanks. But I was thinking about this because for a long time, I didn't do the work. But my life, your life will get better. It will. It'll get better. Just putting alcohol down, it's going to get better. At least a little bit, you know, and I'm very lucky. I mean, you know, the desire to drink was removed, so I didn't have that either. You know, I'm not tortured by wanting to drink all the time, but I'm not praying, like I said earlier. I have a sponsor in name only that I'm waving to, and I'm not doing any work. And I realized this. We were talking about this yesterday, how I was always waiting for the other shoe to fall. I felt like the imposter, you know, like things were going well, but I knew I didn't deserve it. And I think the reason I didn't deserve it was because I hadn't cleaned up what I needed to clean up, because I was always waiting to get caught. Not that I was like, you know, there were bills, there were debts, there were things like that. And then there were definitely some people that if they walked in front of me, I'd be, you know, probably crawling on the ground to get to the other side so they wouldn't see me. That actually happened to me once in a mall. I saw a girl I knew from high school, and I went, you know. And I don't even know why I did that, you know. Like, I wasn't afraid, but I just did, you know. So that was a big thing, you know, like waiting for the other shoe to drop, not telling my secrets to anybody. And then that paralyzing fear of people, you know. At one point, eventually I moved to Milwaukee. Short version is I get sober. A year later, I find young people. 9 months later, I have a baby and unmarried. and come home and hand my mom the baby and say, I have to go to AA, and which she really loved AA for a long time. I was really not the best example. But anyway, long story short, I end up in Milwaukee, and I forgot I had a point there. Oh, man. Anyway, God, see, that scares me, huh? No, I know. I found a job that I love, but Okay, so it was keeping secrets, fear of people. Ah, fear of people. So I moved to Milwaukee, and I was engaged to a sort of weird man. I won't go into that. The women know about it, but I'm not going to say here. But anyway, he stopped going to AA. And eventually I start going, find it meetings and start going, get involved, and I love it, you know, I really love it. And my son is thriving in the snow. He loves it up there. And eventually, though, he got to an age where, you know, he's one of us. He's sober 2 years now, so you can imagine at 12 or 13, I'd be like, let's do your homework. He'd be like, yeah, no, I don't think so. I'm going to go ice skating. I'm like, ugh. I mean, so difficult. And he was 6 feet tall at like 12, so I was scared. And but he ended up going to a military school, which he wanted to go to. I didn't make him go there. He wanted to go there. And so my mother had said, you know, it was really expensive, so I needed help. And I said, well, how, you know, I'm thinking they're going to pay for it all. And I said, well, I'll just sell everything, you know, and not thinking that she would make me do that. Because I'd lived under the umbrella plan for a very long time. And so she said, yeah, when are you having your garage sale? And I'm like, what? So I have the garage sale, and then I downsize my life, and I move into a studio, and I thought, well, I'll just get a job as a waitress. I'll just be a waitress. I've never been a waitress in my life. I'm like 30-something years old. I was mortified. I was mortified to walk up to a table and take an order. It's so crazy, like, how all these little things that I wish I would have done that I tell my sponsees to do now, like, go talk to three women you don't know, because that will pay off in spades later. When you get over those fears and you do the work here now, it pays off so much down the road, and I missed all that. And so I got through that as, you know, a waitress. Not a very good one. I'd threaten to quit on Saturday nights. You know, I'd go and sit down on the floor in the kitchen because I'd freak out. You know, I'd be like, I don't know what they ordered. And I'd sit. And he'd be like, all right, what did they have? And so we'd, like, backtrack through the whole thing and figure it out. And I'm sure the only reason I wasn't fired because my day job was for this guy's father. But the long and the short of it was I ended up getting a job as a Well, that's a whole long story, but I managed a restaurant after that, and I helped my brother open his restaurant after that. And I think that it's been the best thing I've ever done was to come here, and you don't know how lucky you are, to quote Israel, who spoke here several years ago, if you're in this room. It's an amazing way of life. And the other thing, too, I've realized over the years is, like, every mistake I've ever made, if I've stayed here and I've done the work, the results of that mistake were not for nothing. Like, I moved to Wisconsin because I was chasing a weird man that I was engaged to. While my brother met his wife, my son got to get a great education. I found a career that I never would have found, you know, had I not gone up there. And the way I found that job, too, just FYI, is I started going through the phone book and I said, God, what would you have me be? Page by page by page by page until something jumped out at me, and then I would call. And I'd be like, nope, not getting fixated on an outcome. And I have had an amazing career. Not career, I wouldn't say career, but I've loved my job for a long time. I love my job. And I met my husband, and I got involved in a group that was formed there that I absolutely fell in love with, and we met every night, And then when we lost our space, we met in people's homes every night until we were able to get another space. It's been amazing. I love this group. I come here because I have sponsees here, and it's amazing to watch you guys, what you've done. It's funny, I love walking in the door and you have all these greeters. My sponsor says that's the most important job probably in an AA meeting, is to be at the door and greet the newcomer and make them feel welcome. And I love that. And I love that, who's in there? Is that Amanda? I've been sitting in the booth with Amanda and Kitty, so I want to give a shout out to those girls. It's awesome. All you guys that get positions and stay active in this group, and it's amazing. It really is amazing. But it can't replace the work that needs to be done with the sponsor. And I learned that the hard way, and that's all I'm saying. I'm not saying any of you are doing that, but I just, where I got sober, there was a lot of love and service and meetings, you know, for Ikipa and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And everyone was batshit crazy. And I don't know if any of you can relate to that, but, you know, and people were screaming at the top of their lungs at each other, and, you know, I mean, it was insane. And then let's go to AA afterwards, you know. So I think the work has to be done. That's just my opinion. And the sooner you do it, the better. I'm really fortunate with the women that I sponsor. It's I learn more about myself every day listening to them. And hearing myself and realizing, you know, when I hear them, it heals me, you know, and I realize, wow, you know, this is so cool, this thing that we have that we get to share with each other. And it makes me feel like what I went through wasn't for nothing. And it makes them feel not alone. Like, yeah, you did that too, really? That's pretty cool. You know, not that it's okay to do it, but we recover, you know? I don't know. So I guess you guys are going to have an early night. Stan was pretty short, and I'm pretty short, but thank you all for asking me to speak, and that's it.